Welcome back to 5 Questions, a Critical Mass for the Visual Arts podcast in which we ask artists at least 5 uncommon questions aimed at contextualizing their own work within the St. Louis art world and beyond. This time, we're chatting with Jessica Barron. In Jessica's own words, she is a poet, curator, and lecturer at the Sam Fox School of Design and Visual Art. She also teaches in St. Louis University's Prison Arts and Education program. She holds a BA in Visual Art from Columbia University, New York, and an MFA in Poetry from Washington University in St. Louis, where she lives with poet Nathaniel Farrell and their dog, Benny. And just to add to that a little bit, Jessica was curator and director of Fort Gondo Compound for the Visual Arts for the past 4 years until its closing a few months ago. She was a 2012 Creative Stimulus winner and has written numerous poems, essays, and reviews for such publications as St. Louis Magazine, the Denver Quarterly, the St. Louis Beacon, Rumpus, and the Temporary Art Review, among others. She recently co-curated a 100 Boots poetry series at the Pulitzer. Her recent collection of poems, Common Sense, is available from Lost Roads Publishers. Jessica Barron, this is actually a real treat for me, I have to say, as someone who writes, and, you know, I try to do what you do, but just not as well. So I'm excited about this. Welcome, and I'm going to be asking you some questions, as you have no doubt already gathered. The first question that we always start with is, why do you do this to yourself? You know, poetry, writing, art, curating, why?
Yeah, it does sound much harder when it's being said to you than when you're looking at the list of 5 questions.
Is that too confrontational?
No, it's good. It really has been a soul-searching question thinking about it in advance. I think maybe like a very Freudian response is that I feel like I made a decision very early in life. I convinced my family to allow me to move out when I was 16 and go to this performing arts high school in Chicago, and I got scholarships and all kinds of stuff to get me there. But it was this idea that I was going to be an artist. Mm-hmm. And subsequently, that's also meant that my parents now think that all my problems stem from the fact that I left home early and
oh, of course.
I decided to be an artist, you know, and I wasn't properly nurtured, you know. So I basically am just attempting to mold my life so that that decision I made when I was 16
right.
seems like it was a
rationalization.
Very good
that's
decision.
Great.
So that's like the unflattering truth. I'd like to think that it's also because it's what I'm good at, though. I mean, I think I might have been more prone to answer that way even 5 years ago. I think mm-hmm. that maybe the older artists get and stick with this, they're confronted with the reality of what this life means. And that often this notion of actually being good at art actually sort of dissolves into a myth of nonsense. Mm-hmm. There are so many ways to be creative and so many different people from different paths that have been excellent makers. I don't know necessarily that my, you know, idea that when someone told me in kindergarten that I drew rainbows well, that therefore I had a gift at art, you know, really meant a whole lot. So I don't know. It that becomes a more challenging conceit the older you get. Mm-hmm. So that's the long answer, I guess.
Yeah. So would you say that it's possible to establish, this is just kind of based on what I know about you, the reason I'm asking
sure,
this question.
Sure.
Is it possible to establish some recognizable sort of like in long lasting art scene in St. Louis? Or is that, do you feel like that's always going to be mutable, like be constantly turning over, you know, in terms of like Fort Gondo
yeah,
and all that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the answer to both those questions is yes, but they kind of require caveats. Yes, I think there will be a long-term arts culture here. Because there's always been something, even thinking about, you know, Bob Cassily and you know, the whole sort of kind of assemblage era and of art makers that defined the city even in the 70s and 80s. And
yeah.
And obviously we've gone through more of a legitimation process than having galleries and nonprofits and things that, again, have maybe more national recognition in the past 15 years, but so that's a long way of saying I think there will always be an arts culture here, but the mutability is definitely also very real. I don't think these more traditional aspects, i.e. the galleries, museums are going to vanish or anything like that. I just think that we're going to have to deal with this inevitable turnover of a lot of the artisan projects. And I think there is a reason for that, though, that I'm only recently realizing because I'm living it to a certain extent.
Yeah, right.
A lot of the arts opportunities are for emerging artists that are very young, and they favor people in their 20s. What happens then when people, one, have gotten those sort of initial emerging artists awards, exhausted them, and then decide to stay?
Right.
The more longitudinal support is what's missing, and mid-career artist support. I don't really know what that means, because I don't think St. Louis is unique in not having that. I don't know any cities that have a lot of mid-career support, to be honest. I think what other cities may have are more kind of a moneyed populace that are art consumers. And again, those are rare cities, again, larger metropolitan areas. So it may just be confronting an issue that a lot of smaller scale cities have. So then maybe the question is, what can be done with that problem?
Right.
How do you support art spaces, artists, you know, not just when they're in their kind of first blushes of success, which almost suggests here in our current ecology how it works is that they should get these first blushes of success and fly off elsewhere, actually.
Yeah.
The way they're currently modeled.
That's the economic message
right.
we're sending
like,
them.
Like, you
yeah.
got the GRB or, you know, you got the artist fellowship. Okay, okay.
Right. You're not independently wealthy.
Yeah. Go to New York now. Yes, yeah. Like that's, so then, what happens to those who stay? That's the bigger issue.
And so that actually leads neatly into the next question, which is, which of your works is most likely to end up in a suburban basement? And actually, it's funny because I know two people who have one of your 366 skies in their suburban basements.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure the prints are in a lot of suburban basements.
Yeah.
Definitely all my high school work is in a lot of suburban basements, namely my parents and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of that, though, the larger fate of poetry. I think the equivalent would be that they end up in a Goodwill store somewhere between like Ethan Hawke's novel and like a self-help book.
Like your chapbook is shoving
there.
Yeah,
yeah, you're like, oh, yeah. It, like not even a used bookstore, like the Goodwill
right.
section. You know?
Copied up a table somewhere.
Yeah, like obscure cooking manuals and then your, you know, prized book poetry. It's I'm sure it may already exist somewhere when you know a St. Vincent de Paul. So
I feel like I need to start giving people the option to just not answer that question and just be like, pass.
It's a reality. And you know, the funny thing, when I first read it, I'm like, maybe I'm not understanding this right. Like, maybe that means it's a good thing. Like, your work is sold. Like,
It could be.
And then the more I listen to the other answers, like, sort of universally interpreted as negative, I'm like, okay, I get it now. I'm gonna now, like, am I supposed to be excited about that? I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's wonderful. Anyway,
who are we to say at this
yes.
point? Okay, so then what do you think needs to happen here in St. Louis? And I want to talk a little bit about your role as curator
sure.
first, and maybe so like when you curate a show, do you see your role as kind of connected to like broader goals of the art ecosystem, or are you more just kind of focused on that artist or that group at that particular time?
No, that's a good question. I think a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think a good curator takes into consideration what's being shown, what has been shown, at least recently, and how they can maybe fill a gap. And that's really important, actually.
Right.
And I think we've seen that failure recently on some larger scales where people were misperceiving what that gap is in terms of what's happened at CAM and things like that. But I also think that at least, especially when you're working with a solo exhibition, it really is about helping the artist realize a show to their best capacity, like being more of a facilitator.
Yeah.
I mean, curators, I think, run the gamut between those that really are authors of a sort of expression in which they're utilizing other artworks to illustrate that kind of message or visual essay or however they're seeing the show, and others that really want to work with an artist over a long period of time and help them refine what it is they're doing to its best possible kind of visual capacity. And I'd like that. I like getting lost in someone's work and way of thinking. That's exciting, to think differently rather than imposing my own vision
right
on them.
So that's like your opportunity to sort of just be like a vehicle for the artist's intention and kind of amplify that a little bit.
And that's exciting, you know, and when they, and then when you're able to do something that they are maybe seeing their work anew, or it's helping them realize that maybe certain ways of presenting the work actually, you know, help their kind of expressive conceit, that's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. And I'd much prefer that, you know, rather than getting loaned work in boxes and right. assembling it on the wall with absolutely no contact with the artist, which often is a equation that means that you're working with maybe higher profile artists, but that's kind of a bullshit conceit too in my mind. It's sort of vanity curating. Like the curator walks away with their own sort of list of hot names that basically exist more as a resume point than an actual show that was meant to be seen.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. So then what about in the broader sense? Brett, when we interviewed him, talked about things like infrastructure, transportation.
Yeah.
And then Amy and William and Megan talked about just the various aspects of, you know, just your career and sort of how that fits into the socio-political climate and all of that, and how art can kind of influence that. Do you have any thoughts on what needs to happen in St. Louis? And that,
yeah,
please.
No, definitely. I was hoping it was related to the kind of question about like what needs to happen here. I guess it's a hard question. I do really agree with this idea that, or I believe I'm agreeing, I'm assuming that this is what you mean, that there has to be more support for the full ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be saying this because it sounds obviously selfish, because I also work as a critic and curator, but I do really strongly believe that you can't have a successful art ecosystem without supporting critics and curators. Yeah. How in the world can you can't just have these shows in a vacuum, and you need to be able to support them, especially since the dailies and weeklies in the city are not going to support them with full-time jobs. Yeah. So what's missing is that, you know, the grants should have a kind of tripart funding strategy and also supporting, again, curatorial and critical work. They're just sadly very unsustainable positions otherwise, and it sounds like cliches that they're positions for the wealthy, but they are. You have to have means right now. Yeah. And not only that, you know, it also assumes that you could possibly be holding 5 different jobs, and that's only possible for a certain number of years in one's life right. before it's just total implosion. So, for someone to really have the time, especially for the writing, I'm not saying that curating is any less rigorous, but I mean, it takes time to write. Writing mm-hmm. is painful. To be able to be supported in that,
and you have to sit with it a little bit.
That's right, and not just make it something that's just on the fly. And it is really sad. I mean, ultimately, still, I think the ideal situation would be for the newspapers to be supporting it. And again, we're not an unusual city in the sense that the nation has hemorrhaged their permanent art critics in all of the major newspapers. So, you know, there's maybe only like 3 full-time art critics employed anymore these days anyway. So
wow.
we're not that unusual. Yeah, it used to be 10, and I think it's whittled down in the past 5 years even. So it's to say that in that context, we're suffering the same problem the U.S. at large is suffering from.
Sure.
But it is creating even just, again, the stratification of the art world being this, again, sort of a vanity profession rather than something that can actually support people from all economic levels.
Well, sure.
And I also agree, and it's something I appreciated hearing from a lot of the other interviews too, was this idea of how disconnected to a certain extent St. Louis is. And I think that is very real, and what has created some of the kind of recent crises that have struck our community again, namely with like the CAM show, we need to be able to communicate between communities. And I liked actually Brett's point a lot that it can come down to public transportation, actually. Mm-hmm. There's some very fundamental structural issues that, again, are economic that could help rectify that. And these are large issues that I have no idea. I mean, this is larger than critical mass or rec. You know, these are mayoral concerns, but I'm, you know, it's funny how it does have an effect on just the accessibility between place and community in the city. And because ultimately, again, I think everyone's saying the same thing, but just not necessarily realizing that everyone's saying the same thing.
Well, and that's what's interesting too, is you have, you know, we all think we're saying the same thing, and then the mayor comes out with something that's like, oh, what we need is more police on the streets. And then all of us are like, no, that's not what we're saying. And, you know, I think it's like what you're saying is...
That was an eye roll.
Yeah, we all... that was the sound of all of us collectively rolling our eyes.
A collective eye roll in the room, yes.
But if you only have a group of critics or a group of editorial writers or something who come from a particular political class or group, then their concerns are the ones that are reflected in the...
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a problem. And that's the thing, it's not... And again, even if I'm suggesting that there be a critic at the RFT and the Post-Dispatch, two is not enough, too. You know, that's the thing. In order to have that kind of representation of the plurality of voices in the city. So, yeah, it's a tough thing to solve. And I really genuinely don't know how to solve that, except for, I don't know, some, you know, what seems to be the private sector being the only place anymore where some of these things can possibly be funded through.
Yeah.
And that's hard to try to be courting, again, the 1% basically to help the other 99%. So it brings us back to square one. So I don't know. Yeah. It's a tough one. It really is.
Yeah. So I'm gonna shift gears just a little bit here. What's something you wish that someone would ask you about your writing or your art or your work?
That's a good question, because it sounds almost some sort of dream question that I'm like, I don't know. No, but I was confronted with a question recently. I gave a reading in May in New York that was very spontaneous. I was invited at the last minute. It was this wonderful series through Ugly Duckling Press, and they have what's called the Cellar series. And they have three readers read their poetry, and then they have a long Q&A afterward, which is really nice. And it's in their print studio and very intimate and lovely. But I'm not sure what it was in my poems that compelled this question, but someone from the audience asked me, is it really possible anymore to have a working class poet? And it was both a dream question and a nightmare question, because it's enormously complex. But I think somehow over the years, I've really strongly latched on to this identity of being from the working class, and that being a cause for maybe a lot of heartbreak in certain ways, certainly in certain environments that I've been in, when you realize the level of class discrimination that actually occurs, how subtle it can be. And but then also how impossible it is now, because the working class has completely changed. That was based on literal wage earners. I mean, again, my dad worked at the steel mills his whole life. The steel mills do not exist in that way anymore. I am probably sub-working class, even in terms of my income level, but I am not working class because I work at a university. So there's the difference between two education levels. And what used to define the working class was not access to these upper-level educational environments. So... I don't know. I'm still mulling it over. I actually don't think it is possible. Mm. You know, I really actually think, because I think we've annihilated that definition, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And also this idea that if somehow you are publishing poetry, say I didn't go to college and was still a poet who was publishing, that too, though, would knock me out of the working class because of, again, this notion of art being a privileged sort of intellectual sector. So anyway, it's really interesting to me, but I think it's indicative of how, again, our arts culture has changed so much, because I think that was possible, actually, and defined a lot of early 20th century poetry, especially. And that type of, I guess, economic identity has to be we maybe need some time to reflect on what's actually happening there.
Sure.
And how we're defining ourselves in class structures, because it's still obviously, I think, a big kind of even running current through all of these questions, but we don't have the same vocabulary for it mm-hmm. anymore.
Yeah, and so then is, you know, things like art and poetry, are these, at this point, sort of super structural?
Well, and that's where it's a problem. Yeah. They aren't. I don't think anyone in St. Louis, especially, and that's why I also love this city in term, and especially its arts culture, we're not working from that rarefied space. Right. We actually are trying to, like, wrestle it out. I guess that also sort of goes back to the question about what I wish for St. Louis, too, is while I do think we've come a long way in trying to shed this sort of shame, this inner shame of not being... what, Chicago? Right. Not being New York, not being LA, I don't know who the hell we think we should be. It still hasn't completely dissipated. And I really hope soon that also can be, you know, just let that shit go.
Then we can move beyond
that. Yes, let that shit go. And then maybe we can start to work on something like this, which may be a good project for us as makers. Like, how are we defining the new kind of economic sector for arts makers? Mm-hmm. I think we actually know what that means without romanticizing it, without exploiting it. It's just a reality for almost everyone I know working here in the creative field. So
yeah, sure. Yeah. So then is that the end game, or do you have something else envisioned there?
No, I don't know. I guess the end game... I mean, it's funny, it's like thinking about this, and it maybe goes back to like, why do I make something? One of these days, I really want to write a great book, you know? Like, I want to write Citizen, you know? Mm-hmm. I want to write a book that, like, moves people. Mm-hmm. That, and I know for a fact I haven't gotten there yet, but it's just like, that's why I'm doing this. I want to write one of those books that people fucking love, you know, and that they have it, a ragged copy of it. And I think that relates back to ambitions, you know, with an art space, which I really miss running and wish I could somehow figure out a way to do again. And it's about community. I mean, that's the most lamented part to me right now, too, about not overseeing Forgondo is just, it just was a really lovely community of people mm-hmm. that I felt like they had actual affection for the space. They had pride in having been there. It helped people's practice grow. And that was so, so nice. And I guess that would be the equivalent of a book that's really meaningful. It helps you grow. You know, it's the thing that, like, if you're in high school and someone else is reading that book and loves it, you become friends with them. You know, like, it creates community through the book. So those are the end games. Mm-hmm. Somehow either through an art space or, you know, more ideally... the great art ambition of making something actually good.
And you know what? The first, when I was in undergrad, the first alternative space I ever went to, Forgondo.
Aw, I love that. So, no, it makes sense. Again, it's moving.
It is important to people.
That's a special space. Those places are special. Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jessica.
Yeah, thank you.
For joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this episode of Five Questions. Thanks to Jessica and to you, our listeners and community. Five Questions is a program by Critical Mass for the Visual Arts, a nonprofit self-formed visual arts collaborative dedicated to promoting, enhancing, and initiating contemporary visual art in the St. Louis region. You can pick up Five Questions on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can find us on criticalmassart.org/fivequestions, or you can follow Critical Mass on Twitter at @criticalmassstl. Next time, we're chatting with Adelaide Zagete, who was awarded our Creative Stimulus Award this year and has recently returned from residency in Iceland. Her final show, Farewell, closed out the beloved St. Louis art institution, Forgondo. Also, congrats to Jess Witte, our first Public Works Project recipient. Her project, Seed the Change, was just recognized by Americans for the Arts as part of their annual public art review. I am your host, Joe Colburn. Brett Williams produced Five Questions. Sarah Hammond edited it. It was brought to you by Critical Mass for the Visual Arts. I will see you next time.